Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That's what it's all about, right? You want to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you want to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind, what is weighing on you, what is eating at you. Because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating is not food. The problem, the real problem, is what's eating at you. So here's the thing. If you are turning to food, it means you're turning away from something else. And I am here to help you face whatever it is that you're turning away from, which is sometimes unconscious, which means it's hidden. It's out of awareness, but not out of operation. Kind of like a weed and a root. My favorite analogy for the unconscious, because we can't see a root, but we know it's there because it is growing the weed. And similarly, with the unconscious, you know, the weeds symbolize the diets, focus on food, all of that stuff. So with the unconscious, there are areas of ourselves that we're in the dark about. It's like it's underground in our unconscious. So we're not aware of them. They could be thoughts, ideas, beliefs, even feelings, all kinds of things, associations, conflicts, etc. We're not aware of them, but they affect us. Why? Because if we're focused on eating, all of those things, all of those behaviors that harm us, that hurt us, that we consciously say, why can't I stop this? I know it's bad for me. I know that this is not a behavior that is in my best interest. Why do I keep doing it? It's not about willpower. It's not about control. It means something is going on in you that you are unaware of. But we're here to bring what's hidden into the clear light of day. When we do that, then you can deal with it. It's sort of like you cannot fight an invisible army. You just get beaten up. But when you make that army visible, then you know what you're fighting. Then you can fight back. So that's what we're doing here. Binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating is actually a coping skill. It's just a coping skill that hurts you. It hides the true root problem and ends up making you feel bad. And then you feel bad about yourself. So it's a coping strategy that is like a frenemy. It helps you in some way because it hides the true root problem. And those root problems are things that are uncomfortable. We want to protect ourselves from that. We don't want to feel uncomfortable. But it also hurts you because it damages your sense of self, your self-esteem. And again, when you feel bad about yourself, you can end up eating for comfort. And then it's a vicious cycle. So we want to break that cycle. So how do you do that? First, by identifying what that root issue is. Sometimes you think you know what it is. People tell me all the time, oh, Dr. Nina, I know what's bothering me. I know what's bothering me. There's nothing hidden about it. But wait, I'm going to tell you a story in a second that will illustrate how you can think you know what's in your mind, but there's something else going on. So the first step to change is to identify what's eating at you, which can be tough. Again, you may think you know what's going on, and you may be wrong. If you've watched my new video series, I talk about some people who were quite sure they knew what was bothering them, and they were wrong. And when they realized what the true problem was, they were able to deal with it, and everything changed with food. And if you want to see the series, just go to my website, Dr. Nina Inc. You can sign up for free. You can watch it, and I think you're going to love it. It's going to really help you. And that's drninainc.com. So one of the examples that I like to use, if you listen to the show, you're familiar with this, but you can't hear this enough, right? Because it's a reminder. So one of the patients who really illustrates this idea of something hidden going on is Jenna. Now, Jenna was relaxing and watching TV and just really, she was Netflix and chilling. When all of a sudden, as she put it, Ben and Jerry started calling her name. Calling her name. Nothing was bothering her. Nothing was on her mind. She was just chilling out and watching TV. This was not emotional eating, she told me. She was quite sure that this sudden need for ice cream proved she was addicted to food, Chunky Monkey in particular. She was addicted to Chunky Monkey, she said. I did not think so. So I started asking her some questions. What was she watching on TV right before ice cream started calling her name, come to me, Jenna. Well, it turned out to be Charmed, her favorite show. So once again, Jenna thought this proved she was addicted to ice cream. To her, it was her only explanation for why she was suddenly thinking about ice cream, suddenly preoccupied with Chunky Monkey. And I asked her, well, wait a minute, what was the episode about? And she said, well, it's the episode where the devil comes down and the sisters start fighting and everything gets nasty and contentious and awful. And then she went, oh. She stopped, literally like that. Oh, because that is the moment when she realized watching the show brought up feelings about her relationship with her sister. But before she could be consciously aware that she was being triggered, she turned to ice cream for distraction. So she thought she was triggered by ice cream. No, she was triggered by the show. And then she got mad at herself for binging on ice cream. Guess what? Who was she really mad at? Take a guess. Yes, you're right. Her sister. So then her anger was displaced from her sister to herself because she couldn't deal with her feelings towards her sister. So she turned them on herself. So if we had just been focused on ice cream, we would have missed the true root problem. So like Jenna, you can get so good at coping with issues, coping with triggers, coping with problems, and distracting yourself with food that it can be tough to know what you're actually feeling or why you're feeling that way. So I developed a formula to help you figure it out. So often what you think of as a trigger food actually points to the true trigger, the hidden trigger, which is the underlying emotion, need, conflict, whatever is underground, unconscious, hidden. So here is my way to crack the code of emotional eating, and that is that what you choose to eat, everyone usually has sort of a go-to type of food. What you choose to eat actually gives you a clue as to what is going on inside. So like with Jenna, it was ice cream. So foods that are sweet and smooth and creamy, like ice cream, frozen yogurt, pudding, stuff like that, they suggest a longing for comfort, a need for soothing and nurturing. So if you are turning to ice cream, that is a clue that you need to comfort yourself or seek comfort from someone else, and doing that with comfort words rather than comfort food. When you know what it is you need, you're much more likely to be able to get it. So foods that are filling, break bread, cakes, you know, pizza, pasta, anything that sort of is bulky and filling, that's correlated to loneliness, emptiness. Because those are bulky foods, they take up space inside you, and they symbolically fill an internal void. So if you are craving those kinds of filling foods, that is a clue that you may be feeling deprived, empty, lonely, and using food to fill up. You need to find a way to assuage that loneliness and that emptiness. And that is two ways. One is by being with people. Have fulfilling relationships instead of filling up on food. And the other is to convert loneliness into solitude. So loneliness is when you're alone with a mean part of yourself, just a restless, icky feeling that you have. You're just, loneliness feels horrible because you're just stuck in it. But when you are alone with a part of yourself that can be soothing, supporting, just a nice part of yourself that can be encouraging, then that is called solitude. It's easy to be alone when you're alone with a calming part of you. It's horrible to be alone when you've just sort of ditched yourself or you're being mean to yourself. And you know, being mean to yourself does not lead to being nice to yourself. And being nice to yourself is the cure for any kind of problematic eating. The way you respond to yourself is easier said than done. But that is the cure for emotional eating, relating to yourself in a different way. Foods that are crunchy, like chips, pretzels, even apples, carrots, anything with a crunch, anything that you have to have like a bite, anything biting, those are associated with anger. So if crunchy foods are the ones that you turn to most, you may be angry. And by the way, something about anger, when I mention this, people say, I'm not an angry person. Oh, that's not me. Well, guess what? No, you are not an angry person if you feel anger. You're a person who is angry because of a situation. And by the way, anger does not mean anger. It doesn't mean like on a scale of 1 out of 10, you're enraged. Frustration is a form of anger. Irritation is a form of anger. Annoyance is a form of anger. But when you don't allow yourself to have feelings that are anything on the spectrum of anger, something that's like annoyance, which is like maybe a 2 or 3 on a scale of 1 to 10, can feel like a 10. And then what happens? All too often, people will get mad at themselves. They'll take that anger that they feel towards a person or a situation, but they don't want to feel it. It's upsetting. So they stuff it down, literally and figuratively, and then they get mad at themselves for eating. And so that way, the anger that you don't want to feel towards a situation or a person then becomes turned on you. And now you're mad at yourself, and that's not fair. And then you're mad at yourself, and then you feel bad. And then when you feel bad, what distracts you? Food. There's the vicious, vicious cycle. Now, sometimes I hear from people who say they know what they're feeling and nothing changes. So clearly, they say food is the problem. So my answer to that is, hey, if you express your feelings and you still feel it, then either there's something else going on that you're not aware of, something unconscious, or the anger that you're aware of is hiding what you don't want to feel. So often, there's another emotion that's not getting expressed. Now, anger is that's a good example, because often women, particularly, women are taught not to be angry. We get the message that nice girls don't get mad. That's not nice. Don't be mad. Or relax. Calm down. How many times have I been told that? I can't even begin to count. How many times I've been told to relax, calm down, you're too hyper, you're too much, don't be mad. And so often women learn to repress and suppress their anger and convert their anger into sadness. So if you are sad and you have felt your sadness and you have cried and cried and cried, you have cried a river of tears and nothing is changing, then I suggest to you that under that sadness, lurking behind that sadness, is something like anger. Now, the opposite is true for men. And I'm making, yes, gross general gender proclamations, but we are socialized as women, as men, we are socialized in certain ways, overtly and covertly. And guys are basically told, don't be sad. You know, you see like a little boy fall down and a little girl fall down. The little boy falls down and the parents are like, oh, you're okay. Shake it off. You're okay. Don't cry. Little girl falls down and cries. Oh, honey, come here. Let me hold you. That's okay. Right? So totally different responses to the same feeling. So with guys, they're told, don't be sad. So often it's the reverse for women. Women cry when they're really angry. Men get angry when they're really sad. Men often have a hard time with vulnerability. And sadness doesn't have to be sadness. Sadness can be anything that's passive or vulnerable. Guys are taught, don't be vulnerable, don't be passive, don't have any of those types of feelings. Man up. So, you know, you man up, boys don't cry, and you displace that sadness into anger. So if you are mad all the time and nothing is changing, maybe you have underlying conflicts about sadness and vulnerability. If you are sad all the time and nothing is changing, maybe you have underlying conflicts about anger. Remember, if you are turning to food, you're turning away from something else. There is always a reason. And when you are curious, not critical, you can discover what is really going on and attend to that directly. So if you would like to join the conversation, share your thoughts, anything about what I've been talking about, I welcome your call, 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. Okay, so last week I started talking about the various states that turning to food can help with, right? The frenemy helps with loneliness. It helps with various things. And one of the top states that people turn to food to avoid or protect themselves from is anxiety. So thoughts and beliefs create emotions, which in turn lead to behavior. And if you have a thought like, everyone hates me, I am such a loser, I am not good enough, I'm being judged, I'm going to be discovered for who I really am, something along those lines, you're going to feel anxious, you're going to feel terrible. So one way to manage anxiety is to question whether it is a fear or a reality. So if you're thinking, what if? And sometimes that what if is implied. But what if? What if is fear about the future or fear that someone is thinking something about you? That's anxiety. And that can lead to having terrible feelings about something that may or may not actually be happening. So the antidote to what if is what is, which is reality. And reality is everything you know to be factual and true. So ask yourself, if you have the thought of, everyone hates me, let's just take that one. Or I'm such a loser. I'm a loser. Let's take that one. That's the one I hear a lot. Ask yourself if there is actual evidence that you are a loser. And what is a loser, by the way? Now, how do you define it? When you have those broad thoughts like that, how do you define a loser? So you're a loser, not good enough, being judged. Chances are there is no real evidence that you're a loser or that something is defective about you. It's just a feeling. It's a thought that turns into a feeling, and feelings are not facts. So one way to deal with it, aside from questioning it, and remember, you're not a mind reader, so don't think you know what goes on in other people's, minds. Because what happens is we also, not only do we what if things, we say, oh, I know they think this about me. Now, sometimes that's true. Sometimes people think negative and critical things about us. But often what we think they're thinking is not true. And even if there is someone who's thinking something terrible, that doesn't mean everybody is thinking something terrible. It means one person is thinking something terrible. And that one person is not right about you. Whoever that one person is, that person doesn't get to dictate your sense of self. Either does the scale, by the way. The scale cannot measure your value. So another way of dealing with anxiety, besides to question the validity of your own thoughts, is to get used to the physical symptoms of anxiety. Because sometimes just getting accustomed to the physicality of the feeling of anxiety, your mind stops associating physical feelings with anxiety. So some people, when they feel anxious, they get really dizzy. So if you then feel dizzy and you get sort of an anxiety attack because you think, oh my God, I'm having an anxiety attack, I'm dizzy, it's just going to get worse. What we want to do is take away the association to like dizziness and anxiety and thoughts about yourself. So one thing you could do is make yourself dizzy, spin around in a chair, get used to, or spin around and stand up and turn around really fast. Let yourself feel dizzy. Take ownership of dizziness instead of dreading it. So when you get used to it, it won't be so scary. Another common physical experience of anxiety is a really fast heartbeat. You know, when you get anxious and you're just like, and it's just, it's very physical. And then when you feel it, it makes it worse. So if a rapid heartbeat like that causes your anxiety to get worse and you associate the rapid heartbeat with anxiety, make yourself have a fast heartbeat so that you take ownership of it. Run in place, run around a track, run, do something that makes your heart speed up. Okay, in my mind, I just saw, if any of you are fans of Friends, I just got a mental image of Phoebe running around in Central Park. Anyway, just a little humor. Yes, Friends was one of my favorite shows. There it is. So learn to associate a fast heartbeat with something other than anxiety. And when you feel like you control it, it's not going to feel like you're being controlled by it. You learn to tolerate the feeling. It won't be so scary. Your mind won't automatically go into deeper anxiety. So what this is called is exposure therapy. And as with all things, practice makes progress. Another way to deal with anxiety is to listen to music. Listening to music. Music can have a powerful effect on your mood. And the key is not just choose the songs you like, but make sure that you're listening to music that makes you feel the way you want to feel. So don't listen to a depressing, I've lost all hope and I've lost the love of my life song. Do not listen to country music. That will make you feel bad. I'm sorry, I just totally dissed on country music and that was not fair of me. But listen to songs that make you happy. Listen to something that's going to make you feel good. Happy, relaxing music can directly impact your mood. And then when you feel better, when your mood is better, you're less likely to think anxious thoughts. And many people find it soothing. I wouldn't maybe put it that way. People find it soothing to listen to angry music when they're angry or sad. It's like they want music that's going to just say what their mood is. I'm angry. I'm going to listen to punk. However, that actually makes things worse. Won't help you feel better. Yes, it is expressing your feelings. It's congruent with what you're feeling. But you want to listen to music to make you feel better, not more of the same. So when you're trying to stop anxiety, listen to music that's going to make you feel the way you want to feel. Another way to deal with anxiety, and again, with the physicality of anxiety, because anxiety is both a physical feeling and it is a product of thoughts. So another way of dealing with the physical feeling of anxiety is to learn grounding techniques. And this can really help you feel more in control, and they can be very helpful. I talked a couple of weeks ago on the show about progressive muscle relaxation, because if I just say, hey, relax, does that help you relax? Not so much. No, it doesn't help you relax at all, because you need something to relax against. So if you tighten up all your muscles and hold them really tight for a period of as long as you can and then relax, then you have the sensation of relaxation. And then you can build on that. So that's really helpful. That is one grounding technique. And the other is called the body scan. And it's to help you raise awareness of your body, what's going on inside. And the focus is not about do you feel emotions? Do you feel good? Do you feel bad? Do you feel anxious? It's not about that. It's notice where there's a sensation in your body. So is there a tingling in your fingers when you're upset? Do your hands go cold? Is your heart racing? Do you have that sort of cold, clammy feeling? I mean, what do you have, a tight feeling around your chest? Just sort of check in with yourself. And you take a breath and you begin just with, begin with your chest. What are you feeling there? And you check in with different parts of your body. You notice the sensations throughout your physical form, throughout your body. What are your feet feeling? What are your legs feeling? What's going on with your arms and your hands, your neck, your shoulder? Just notice that. And just doing that often helps you get out of the thoughts and focus on your body, which calms you down. Also, learning to live for today. Everyone's like, be in the moment. Be in the moment. Easier said than done. So that is true, but that is not totally what I'm saying. What you want to think about is that anxiety is not some scary feeling. It is not some awful, scary feeling that you need to avoid at all costs. You need to remember that anxiety is just a part of life, and that it's happening in the moment, and it doesn't mean anything about the future or about you. It's something we all experience. And so it's only when anxiety becomes, you know, something that kind of takes over and interferes with your daily functioning, becomes unhealthy, and you need maybe a different strategy, maybe medication or more intensive therapy or something. But remember, when your focus is on your fears, when your focus is on your anxiety, it takes you away from living in the present. It steals your present. And so each day becomes about not feeling anxiety instead of, okay, I feel anxiety, but what else am I feeling today? What else is going on? Just live. Anxiety is part of life. All feelings, by the way, all emotions can be distilled down to mad, sad, glad, and afraid. Anger, sadness, happiness, and fear. And anxiety is under the umbrella of fear. It is just a normal part of life. Okay, so if you listened to my show last week, you heard my guest, wellness coach Devin Burke, talk about the importance of sleep. By the way, if you missed the show live, you can always catch the podcast version. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio, wherever you get podcasts. So Devin was talking about the physiological impact of sleep, rather the lack of sleep, and how that can affect you. And I want to talk about the emotional elements that relate to sleep. Because so many times we use food when we're tired. We use food to perk ourselves up when we're tired. Now that's not emotional eating, but it is the wrong response to exhaustion. When you're tired, you need to rest. Food will not perk you up for long. Your body needs rest, not tired, not food. When you're tired, my mind is going ahead of myself. When you're tired, you need to pay attention to, okay, what do you do when you're tired? When a friend is tired, when a child is tired, do you say, oh, here, eat this chocolate. It's full of sugar. It's got caffeine in it. It's going to perk you right up. Here you go. Probably not. Your friend is tired. A child is tired. You say, oh, you need to rest. You need to take a nap. You need to get some sleep. So here's what WebMD has to say about the relationship between exhaustion and overeating or binge eating. So they say science shows that when people sleep for 4 hours or less, they may end up consuming over 22% more calories than if they had the recommended 8 hours of sleep. You know, and we live in the real world where not a lot of people get 8 hours of sleep, but try to get as close as you can. You know, 7 hours, not five, not six. And make sure those hours are actually restful. The average sleepy overeating, they call it, sleepy overeating. And I hear this all the time. People say, oh, I'm so tired, so I had a bunch of cookies because I thought that would just wake me up. And then, of course, you get the sugar high, and then you get the crash, and then you're worse off than you were before. But they call it sleepy overeating. So the average sleepy overeating results in an extra 550 calories. That adds up to 1 pound of fat per week, or 52 pounds per year. So if you are sleepy overeating, that is something to pay attention to. Yikes, right? That's a lot. New studies have shown that lack of sleep influences at least two hormones that affect hunger. Fat cells secrete leptin, which is a hormone that signals your brain to stop eating. So the stomach, I'm going to get a little scientific for a moment, not too much, just to get the point across. So your stomach secretes the hormone ghrelin. I think it's G-H-R-E-L-I-N. I actually have no idea how to say it. I'm just going to call it ghrelin. Ghrelin. And it reminds you that you need to eat. So that's a hormone that tells you, hey, your body needs food. And sleep deprivation leads to suppression of leptin, which is the hormone that signals your brain to stop eating, and increased levels of ghrelin. So when you're sleepy, you eat more and you don't know when to stop. So that results in a lot of overeating. Now, there are lots of other hormones that affect your sleep cycle. Insulin, growth hormone, cortisol, melatonin. And scientists are just beginning to understand the vast array of interactions among those body chemicals that can affect how we eat when we're barely functioning on minimal sleep. So here are some recommendations. De-stress as best you can before you go to sleep. So important, because cortisol is a stress hormone, and it is related to fat being around your middle. When you're stressed, your cortisol levels rise. And when it's up, so are you. You're not going to go to sleep if your cortisol levels are up. So they have to fall below a very specific threshold in every person before you can go to sleep. So how do you do that? You have to go out of your way to avoid stirring up stress before you sleep. For example, do not watch some stressful TV show right before you go to sleep. Do not watch the news, in other words. Do not think about all the tough situations that are going on in your life. Do not watch TV. Do not listen to music, because all of those keep your stress levels up. One way to do it is visualize a blackboard. I guess now that just kind of dates me. When I was growing up, we had blackboards, and we used an eraser to erase everything. Nowadays, I guess it's a whiteboard. So imagine your whiteboard and use your mental eraser to wipe out everything on the board. Whatever it is that's on your mind, just wipe it away. Because thinking about it before you go to sleep is not going to solve anything, is not going to get better. It's just going to interfere with your sleep and your stress. So, you know, take that warm bath, read that novel, watch mindless TV, but stop watching it an hour before you go to sleep. Do whatever it takes to calm down and de-stress. Also, try to stick to a regular schedule of sleep. Your body loves regularity. So optimally, during weeknights, try to get in bed at the same time. And by that, I don't mean 2 in the morning, unless you have the kind of job where you need to. Night owl people have a problem, because most jobs require you to be up early. So people, if you're a night person, you gotta adapt and find a way to regulate yourself so that if you're in bed earlier, you're going to get better sleep. If you get better sleep, things are going to go better for you the next day as far as eating. So the other recommendation is to watch what you eat and drink before you go to bed. Alcohol should not be, you shouldn't have alcohol right before you go to sleep. You should have, if you have it at least 2 hours. Finish drinking at least 2 hours before you go to sleep, because it will interfere with deep sleep. Avoid caffeine. Sounds obvious, but some people tell me, I was just at a friend's house, and after dinner we were having coffee, and it was like 11 o'clock, and my husband said to her, our host, Nara, like, you're having coffee? It's 11 o'clock. And she said, oh, coffee doesn't bother me. I can drink coffee at 11 and go to sleep. Well, that may be true, but that coffee is going to interfere with her sleep, which will interfere with her hormones, which will interfere with her weight. Okay. Also, the other ones are like, you kind of know it, right? Take an afternoon nap. That sounds good, but really, is it doable? Probably not. Most people can't take afternoon naps. And yes, you have to get the right amount of sleep. We know that. Do your best. Now, another thing to think about is, are you, if you get hungry at night, are you physically hungry or is something else going on? Because at night is when we're not busy. And when you're not busy, thoughts and feelings can creep into your head. Uncomfortable feelings, anxiety can creep in. And so one of the ways that we escape anxiety is to think about food. And sometimes when we think about eating, we get hungry. So are you physically hungry? Think about if you get suddenly hungry at night, or you're binging at night or overeating at night, are you actually hungry or is something going on? And by the way, how do you tell whether you're physically hungry? Physically hungry, you have physical symptoms. Your stomach growls. You're lightheaded. You feel your hunger in your body. Emotional hunger is when something sounds good or looks good, or I really have a sudden craving for XYZ. That's emotional hunger. That's motivated by something else. So when you identify whether you're hungry for food, physically hungry, or you're just wanting to get away from some uncomfortable feeling, then you can attend to that. What is that uncomfortable feeling? Or just at least recognize it. And then sometimes if you just wait 3 minutes, anyone can wait 3 minutes. Now, 3 minutes can feel interminable for anyone who has given birth. You know what I'm talking about. 3 minutes, that could feel like a lifetime when you're trying to push a baby out of your body. But you can do it. You could do it. And if you have pushed a baby out of your body, then you can wait 3 minutes to eat something. And if you haven't, you could still wait 3 minutes to eat something. You can do it. Set a timer. Tell Alexa to set a timer. Tell Google to set a timer and just wait it out. Often by the time those 3 minutes are over, the urge has passed. Okay. Let's talk about happiness. So one thing about happiness is that is another trigger for emotional eating. Why? Because happiness is often associated with losing happiness, right? And our culture has this idea that like, you know, don't get too full of yourself. Your bubble's gonna burst. All these messages of, hey, don't get too happy. Don't feel too good because your bubble will burst. The rug will be pulled out from underneath you. One person's mother told her when something bad happened, well, you were up so high. You were so high up. It was just a matter of time before you fell. Really? So what better way to avoid happiness than to eat something a lot? Focus on your weight, focus on your body that makes you unhappy. That way, if you're never too happy, that happiness cannot be taken away from you. And so really, I recommend that you question this idea of being too happy. The other thing that people do is they create a pattern. We as humans, the way we organize ourselves is that we create patterns. And this comes from, if you hear a rustling in the trees, it could be a predator that's going to try to eat you. So if you hear a rustling in the trees, you know, escape immediately. So the pattern is rustling in the trees. That's the trigger. Escape, escape, saber-toothed tiger. I know we were not hunted by saber-toothed tigers, but it makes for a better visual. So now our brains have evolved where we don't have those cues, but we still create them. And we create patterns. So one of the most common patterns that people make is, something good happened, and then something bad happens, and we correlate them. See, something bad always happens after something good, or bad things happen in threes, or good things happen in threes. Now, good things or bad things are just happening. Your mind is creating a pattern and filtering out everything that doesn't fit the pattern. And so how does this relate to happiness? Well, something good happens. Something really good happens. You get a promotion. You meet someone wonderful. You go on a great vacation. You enjoy your life. Something is happening that is good, and you let yourself feel it. And then inevitably, because we are just living our lives, and bad things happen to us randomly. But we don't want to live in a random world. We want to live in a world that makes sense. So we say, see? There is no randomness to our lives. Something good happened, and now something's bad has happened. Those things are correlated. So I'm not going to feel too good because then I can't feel too bad. And fear of happiness is one of the major problems that leads to stress eating, emotional eating, binge eating, because it's a way to take your happiness away from yourself. So question that idea and start thinking about the patterns that you are making in your life. Do you have this notion of good is followed by bad? Is that an idea that you've taken as a truth? Because it's not. There is no causality between good and bad. They're just equally random. And we want to live in a world of patterns because that makes us feel secure. It makes us feel like, we know what's happening. There's a pattern. Instead of we live in a random world and anything can happen. That's too scary. Okay, now let's talk about happiness. I have here this cool magazine. Time did a special edition called The Science of Happiness. There it is for those of you who are watching. There it is for you guys on Instagram and Facebook. The Science of Happiness. So they did like a whole graph of what makes us happy. So here are some categories. Work. 32% of people say work makes them happy. Money. 47% of people who make under 47% of people who make over $150,000 a year say money makes them happy. People who make $75,000 to $150,000 a year, 39% of them are happy. 30 to 75,000, 30%, and under 30,000, 23% of people say that money makes them happy. I would think it would be lower, but that's interesting. Family. 41% of people who are married without children say family makes them happy. 36% of people who are married with children are happy. 17% of single parents are happy. Worship, people who have faith, 41% of people who go to their place of worship, whatever it is, whether it's a church, a synagogue, or a mosque, 41% who go weekly are happy. 32% who go once a month are happy, and 28% who go seldom or never are happy. Politics, I'm not getting into that, but yes, I am. Okay, I'll get into it. 35% of Republicans are happy, 30% of independents are happy, and 29% of Democrats are happy. And then there's age. You know what is not on this list of what makes people happy? Weight. What you weigh does not make you happy. People often think, well, I'll be happy when. I'll be happy when the scale says this. I'll be happy when I stop binge eating. I'll be happy when I get to this weight. I'll be happy when I meet someone. I'll be happy when I get a new job. It's that when then. And all too often, it is tied to appearance. When I look this way, I will be happier. What is not on their list of what makes people happy is appearance. Now, I posted something about this on Instagram, and one person said, pull it up on, it's going to take too long. Anyway, I'm going to paraphrase what the person said. I said, look, you know, what you look like is not going to make you happy. Don't wait to be a different weight to be happy, because it's not going to work. And people wrote in and said, or messaged me and said, you are so wrong. And they also said, you are so right. But I'm talking about the ones who disagreed with that. Society tells us, they said, society says that we're supposed to look a certain way to be happy. Society and culture says, look this way and you will be happy. And I guess a lot of people believe that, because that's why, you know, you see a lot of filtering and photoshopping and all of that. Like, we're supposed to look a certain way on social media. Like, the way we are is not sufficient. And that if we can find a way to look in some ideal way, we are going to be happy. Except it does not work that way. Because whatever you look like, maybe you're going to feel good if you lose weight. Yeah, you're going to feel good. But that good feeling is not going to last, because it doesn't define who you are. It doesn't define you. And how you feel inside doesn't change. That's the fallacy. That by losing weight, you're going to become a different, better version of you. No, you are not going to become a different version of you. If you are shy, you are not going to become outgoing and gregarious if you lose some amount of weight. If you are an introvert, you are not going to become a social butterfly if you lose a certain amount of weight. It's just not going to happen. You're going to be you. You're going to be you. Just a thinner version of you. You don't feel different. You're losing weight doesn't change your personality. The other fallacy is that losing weight will change the way other people treat you. This is very common. Oh, if I just lose weight, I'll get him back. I'll get her back. Oh, if I, you know, if I just get rid of my dad bod, or, you know, lose these 20 pounds, that person who doesn't like me, they're going to like me. As if the other person is that shallow that the only thing that they would like about you is your six pack or, you know, whatever you weigh? No, no. And this is so hard to give up because what a lovely illusion this is. Imagine the power. You just change your body and you change the way your personality is. You just change your body and you change the way other people treat you. Wow, what power. Who doesn't want that power? That would be a true superpower, only it doesn't exist. You know, you're not going to get a cape with a, I don't know what it would be, what would be on the cape, a W for, you know, weight loss? I don't know. It doesn't work. The key is to accept yourself. Accept yourself. And that doesn't mean accept your weight necessarily. If you want to lose weight, lose weight. But don't think that you're going to lose some part of yourself that you don't like. So challenge the idea that there's something wrong with you if you're shy and introverted. I hear this all the time. People think that they should be different. No. What's wrong with that? Who says that you've got to be like this bubbly, outgoing person to be acceptable? And we all have introverted moments. We all have extroverted moments. We all have a range of different ways of being in the world. Accept that. Don't try to define yourself or think that there's something wrong with you. Don't look at what's wrong. Look at what's right. Instead of saying, I need to change myself in this way because I don't think I'm good enough or I think this should change about me. Well, unless you're hurting someone, which, yeah, if you're hurting someone with your behavior, then yeah, change that. That's probably good. That's a good idea. But assuming you're not, just accept the person you are. Don't try to change yourself. And don't think that if you change your weight, you will change you. The other thing that I also encourage you to do is look for what you like. So often we're really good at looking at what's wrong. In fact, Julia Roberts' character in Pretty Woman said this. She said something like, you know, why is it so easy to believe the bad things? It is easy to believe the bad things, and it is easy to find the bad things. But it becomes less easy when you start looking for the good things. We don't usually look at our friends and look at what qualities about them we don't like. Now, you know, you always have that friend who's late. You always have that friend who talks too much, drinks too much, you know, makes it all about them. But you like them because they have other great qualities. Now, so often with our friends, we say, oh, yeah, they're these things that I wish were different. Oh, well, you know, yeah, it's forgivable because my friend has all these great qualities. But with our when it comes to ourselves, we attack ourselves. We forget the good and we focus on the bad. And then how do you think you feel? Bad? And when you feel bad, you feel bad about yourself. And then you can't be with yourself. And so you turn to food because food puts you in that sort of zone, that food zone, where you're not feeling anything. You're not feeling the bad feeling. You're just, you escape yourself. So the key is to not escape yourself with food, not go in a food coma, not do any of those things. The key is to stay with yourself and be a friend to yourself. Often people, maybe you can relate to this, people treat other people the way they would like to be treated, but they treat themselves the way they were treated in the worst possible ways. So if you grew up and you were neglected, and it doesn't have to be a terrible malintentioned neglect on the part of your family. You know, if you're one of seven kids, you're going to be neglected. If you're one of five kids, you're going to be neglected. Because nobody can take care of all of those kids and give all those kids what they need. And so this is an example of sort of benign neglect, but it's neglect all the same. And so if you don't get what you need, you're getting neglected, not because of some ill intent on the part of your parents, for example, you can grow up and neglect yourself. Treat yourself the way you were treated, but take really good care of other people. Very, very common. If you were abused, often people who are abused do one of two things. Either they become abusers to others, which is more often the case with men, or they abuse themselves. which is more often the case with women. Women turn against themselves. Men, and again, this is just what studies have shown. This is not for all people. Men turn outward, women turn inward. So if you were abused, you will abuse yourself. But be very nice to other people. Here comes a call. I am out of time. So I'm sorry, caller, if you are listening. I just ran out of time, actually. So I think that is Nicole. If you can call back, call me back next week. Oh, I won't be here next week. Call me back in 2 weeks. So everybody, that is the show for today. Thank you so much for being with me here on the show today. I am here every Wednesday, except next week, at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio. You can listen live then, or you can listen later. You can listen later at anywhere you get podcasts. Just do a search for The Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. Have a great couple weeks, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.